because you know when I was a teenager, I lived in very small community that I wished you know I had somebody I could talk to, like you know random things. You know some you know teenagers don't have good connections with their own parents or their own faculty members, that somebody like you know it's like in the middle of like you know like third party situation, that I would think like you know I wish you know I could have somebody like that. That when you know I apply for my you know the athletic and activities office secretary position, I thought like you know well maybe some teenagers, some high school students at ASIJ wanted to talk to someone who are not faculty members, who are not admins, willing to listen them. So that's you know my that was my motivation to interact a lot of high school students.
Welcome to episode 63 of Tokyo Alumni Podcast. Today, our guest is a former staff member of the American School in Japan. She was the Athletics Activities Office Secretary. She assisted athletic programs and co-curricular programs of middle and high school. In 2008, she learned that her mother had ovarian cancer a few weeks after her son's birth. In October 2015, her mother passed away peacefully. As recovering from her mother's passing and her previous marriage, she started thinking of quality of life. For finding what quality of life means, she began blogging in September 2020 because writing helps to express herself. She writes about the differences of international schools to Japanese schools and the perception and cultural differences people may have of Japanese versus English speaking countries. Welcome to the podcast, Ms. Daigo.
Hello, Nikki Harris. How you doing?
Doing good. Good to see you. I said Miss Daigo, but I guess I'll probably go Daigo-san, which Hi. I feel most comfortable with. Hopefully you're okay with that too.
Go ahead.
All right. And today we'll talk a bit about your time at ASIJ as well as a bit of the time before and after. I think you are going to bring something new to the table in regards to guests, right? So far, we've had administrators, we've had teachers, we've had parents, and obviously alumni, but you were part of the international school sort of ecosystem in regards to being part of ASIJ as one of the business staff. So it'd be very interesting to hear your perspectives sort of almost outside of this bubble, right, of parents, students, teachers, sort of looking in, maybe having a bit more objectivity too in regards to, you know, how you perceived your time at ASIJ. Can you tell us a bit about what you did at ASIJ?
Well, actually, you know, people like asking me like what athletic office, you know, athletic and activities office secretary did. I mean, it's very, very unique position, I'd say. International school system is very different from Japanese schools. And my position was very, you had to deal with a lot of things, such as base clearance, for example. Because, you know, many people have no idea about base clearance. And that's a lot of stuff. You know, you have to organize lots of information, not only these athletes. The format of base clearance was different from each military facility, such as like Zama, Yokota, and Yokosuka, because they belong to different military. Zama belonged to Army, Yokosuka is belong to Navy, and Yokota is belong to Air Force. So they have different format, like slightly different. So I have to figure out what kind of information they need for the game, you know, sports games, and what, you know, when's that deadline?
Yeah, with the Dodd schools, ASIJ competed, right? Especially in sports like American football, cross country, actually pretty much everything. And were there any specific bases? Were there any specific bases that had much more sort of difficulty in regards to security clearance than other bases?
I'd say like Yokosuka, the naval base, is very different because their security code, security level was, higher than other military bases, I'd say. Then also like, some events, those, school buses and parents have to meet at certain point at certain time. That was very different from Dama and Yokota.
Interesting. And when you were there, I remember, I think what made your position sort of unique too is one thing I think about a lot too, having, worked in that four international schools is local staff don't interact that much with students. But in your case, you were one of the few business staff that knew a lot of the students. So how did that come about? Why did so many people know you? Was that something you actively seeked, like to try to connect to the students there? Yeah, and how did that come about?
I think that comes from my personal experience. Because, when I was a teenager, I lived in very small community. That I wished that, I had somebody I could talk to, like, random things, some, teenagers don't have good connections with their own parents or their own faculty members, that somebody like, it's like in the middle of like, like third party situation, that I was thinking like, I wish, I could have somebody like that. That when, I apply for my, the athletic and activities office secretary position, I thought like, well, maybe some teenagers, some high school students at ASIJ wanted to talk to someone who are not faculty members, who are not admins, willing to listen them. Mm-hmm. So that was my motivation to interact a lot of high school students.
During your time there, what would you say were some of the best memories working at ASIJ?
Well, for sure, getting to know a lot of then, high school student was the best memories. And as athletic activities office secretary, because at the time the office was located in the high school book locker area. I had no other choice, right? So then I saw high school students who were hanging out at the book locker area every single day. So then I think, I was very lucky to have so much opportunity to get to know a lot of students who were open-minded, friendly and fun and unique. So in fact, as you mentioned, I interacted a lot of students. Then I knew those students who were not in sports activities, and they were surprised I know their names.
So before ASIJ, people kind of say Inta, they say American Scooter, and there's kind of a vague, somewhat, it seems like a vague recognition, among especially Tokyo people. But you personally, were you aware that the school even existed prior to joining? When did you first hear about the American school in Japan?
Maybe like when I was a teenager, I think, because, I was born in 70s and grew up in, 70s and 80s, and this is a bilingual celebrity, Hayami Yu-san. She was your podcast guest. They started, made their own appearance on TV. That having those bilingual TV celebrity or idols are very new thing. And when, you know, I found out they are, you know, they were from international schools or they attended at an international school, I was surprised to know, oh, there are such schools besides Japanese schools. So,
you had heard about it, and when the time came, you joined us, and then unfortunately, though, you leave 2008. So can you tell us a bit about, you know, why you left and what circumstances were surrounding your life during that time period?
Actually, I left in 2007.
2007.
Okay. I was very interested in, like, those, you know, health issue, because my mother, she was pretty sick at the time. That, you know, as a family member, you know, I wanted to try everything to feel her better. Then, yeah, then I was interested in, like, those, you know, massage therapy, because I was not interested in, like, becoming doctor or nurse at the time, because it took it, I was sure it will take long time to become that profession. Then I was thinking, like, what was the fastest way to deal with something like a health. Then I was interested in, like, those, you know, massage therapist, and yeah, I decided to become a massage therapist, like, to help, you know, any possible way to, you know, those, you know, who have health issues, like, you know. So that's why, you know, I decided to leave SIJ 2007. So, yeah.
Interesting. And since then, you've been out of the international school system. Is there any part of you that would like to come back to the international school system in some capacity?
Sometimes, you know, I was thinking about it, because international school is very interesting, unique, compared to, like, any Japanese schools or Japanese companies. It seems like in a more respect to each other. Then I thought, like, you know, that would be more flexible for anyone who are, you know, working at those, you know, international school system. Yeah.
I think that sort of ties well into a question I'd prepared earlier. So schools like, you know, ASIJ, and I think most international schools out there have these missions and mottos. For example, the ASIJ being fostering a community of inquisitive learners and independent thinkers inspired to be their best selves, empowered to make a difference. So, you know, not being a student, a parent, or teacher, but being at school every day and interacting with students, did you feel like at ASIJ, you saw students representing and exemplifying this type of mission statement that ASIJ had?
I feel like some students develop into such citizens, and not every student. Because it seems like, you know, some students were mature or ready to accept the idea what those inquisitive learners and independent students and independent thinkers, you know. And I felt like it is difficult to become such citizens by students themselves. And because I think, you know, it's also how faculty members gave idea to their student how to be inquisitive learners and independent students, you know, independent thinkers. Without good guidances, it is difficult to be inquisitive learners and independent thinkers. I wasn't, you know, interacting with students as faculty members or, you know, coach. I always, you know, observe and interact as staff member. And age-wise, you know, I was, you know, in the middle of parents, faculty members, and, you know, and students. So I think it's easy to see students become inquisitive learners and independent thinkers, and I thought, like, you know, how do the faculty members, you know, encourage their students to be inquisitive learners, independent thinkers, and, you know, in the classroom, and how they inspire their student to be their best their best selves, or, you know, encourage to empower, make a difference to be your best self. Then looking back at, you know, my working experience at ASIJ, it was in 2000, because I worked there 2001 to 2007. Then I think that was the time when LGBT movement started. Then I think, you know, some student did it coming out at the time, that some faculty and staff members showed their support and respect to those, you know, coming out. Then others didn't know what to do. So I think, you know, we started hearing, you know, diversity and inclusion as, you know, something new in 2000. So then faculty need to catch up with, you know, new things as, you know, they interact, you know, younger generations. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually, and as you were saying, 2001 to 2007, it made me realize we almost perfectly overlapped, right? I joined the high school in 2001 and obviously left in 2005. I couldn't be there forever. And I actually distinctly recall what you're talking about with the, you know, the LGBT movement back then. I must have been 2004 or five. Students started the GSSA club. It was a gay straight student alliance. And if I recall correctly, there was some type of movement above the students and teachers. And I can't recall in detail, but at some level of administration, they were trying to stop the GSSA. They didn't want it to
happen. Yeah, yeah.
And I remember, yeah, all, not all, but yeah, about 80% of the students put on their locker some kind of poster that said something like, "Where's GSSA?" And that, I think that was definitely a powerful moment at ASIJ, because it really sort of showed the power of the students, you know, when they all sort of banded together, because clearly 80% weren't LGBT. It was, you know, mostly people who weren't LGBT who were supporting, you know, their allies. So, yeah, I'm surprised this conversation. I totally forgot about that episode. And obviously, yeah, as you mentioned, I think things have definitely come a long way since then. And it's been about 20 years.
I think a lot of faculty members and admins at time were surprised those, you know, GSSA, you know, idea came up on the campus, and it was very new to, like, pretty much everybody. Then I used to live in Bay Area of San Francisco, and, you know, meeting and talking to those, you know, people from LGBT was a new thing to me. That I was surprised, like, you know, some, you know, sort of surprised, like, some faculty members were trying to stop the movement, you know, those, you know, stuff. So I always think, like, what's wrong? What's wrong about it? So, yeah.
That's intriguing that you are seeing that happen too within, you know, the teachers and admin. And again, I cannot, you know, say what percent, but we know that there was a significant pushback. I believe it was at the board and administrative level. And I think ultimately the students actually won out. And, you know, GSSA did continue on. And that was definitely one of the sort of better chapters, I think, when it comes to the history of the school. When you graduate, so after you left, you know, so you pursue massage therapy, you know, your son is born, he's currently, I think you said, in grade six. And you very recently started a blog about quality of life and, you know, cultural differences. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what prompted you to begin this blog? And yeah, let's talk more about that.
Okay, blogging, like, I didn't expect, you know, doing blogging, but a few years ago, I recognized, I have not healed from my mother's passing and my divorce. Both events happened in 2015. And I felt like the best way of healing myself from both events was, everything will be fine if I keep moving forward. But I was wrong. And I needed time to accept like all negative feelings, emotions such as anger, sorrow. I recognize, I need to take better care of myself, emotionally, mentally, and physically. And in Japan, we had our first state of emergency back in springtime in 2000, to, yeah, 2020. So I had a lot of time at home. Then during the time, I asked myself, why am I feeling uncomfortable with myself? Why do I struggle with my feelings? So then I couldn't find any answers. Then as time passed by, I asked myself, how can I feel more, comfortable with myself? How do I get the feelings that I'm good enough? So at the time, I watched a lot of YouTube videos, that many of them were related to spiritual ones. And oh, one of them spoke to me, like every human has desire to express his or herself. Then I started thinking, like, how do I want to express myself? And I didn't find any answers again. Then I started thinking, like, what am I good at? Then finally, I recognized, I'm good at writing.
And when you started writing, was it the intention from the start to focus specifically on sort of this, bicultural, bilingual, international schools, or did that just sort of organically, come to fruition, that just naturally happened?
Because I just like it organically, because I never meant intended to write about those cultural differences or international schools and the differences of Japanese schools and international schools. At first, I wasn't sure if blogging is the proper way to express myself. That actually, I hesitated to post my blog, share it on my, social, SNS, account because, it was a very new thing to me. But I felt like, I'm not going to lose anything if I post, my perspective as a blog. And so what did I have to hesitate? So I just post it and share on my SNS, account. That's how it started. And I started, more blogs, and I recognized, there are many Japanese, there are, some Japanese bloggers who write about their lives in overseas. And I haven't found any bloggers who have working at, working experience at international schools. So that's, how I wrote a blog with a title, International School ni ireru kakugo arimasu ka? Are you ready to send your children to international school by my working experience at SIJ? And through the particular blog, more people find me as a unique blogger. Then I think, I have written some more blogs about differences of international schools and Japanese schools. So I don't mention particular school's name on my blog, but anyway, to me, writing about ACIJ is finding blue ocean among red ocean on the blog platform I registered.
That one you just mentioned, international school ni, I think, was it Kodomo Ireru
Ireru kakugo arimasu ka?
Kakugo wa? So what is that about? Like, what is sort of your premise as well as, conclusion?
Because, you know, when people find out I used to work at SIJ, they ask me very basic questions, like such as, like, you know, these students speak only English, or, you know, do they understand other language, including Japanese? And they know some Japanese returnees, Kikokushijo, attended at SIJ. They also ask me, like, are these Japanese students fully bilingual? And I replied, you know, these questions, they show their interests about international schools. And I also find, you know, many Japanese have, I don't know what it's called, but fantasy or, you know, illusion that is, if Japanese student, like my son, attend at international school, so they become bilingual automatically. So that's why I wrote a particular blog, you know, international school ni ireru kakugo arimasu ka? That it's like, you know, saying like some notes saying, you know, things you need to concern if, you know, you, if, you know, you know, if you consider to send your children to international school, because it is, you know, that's a lot of, you know, pressure for both, you know, child and parents, because society have the kind of, I don't know, misunderstanding or, you know, illusion or something like that. So
And I feel like, you know, there's this constant quest amongst Japanese to improve English, because the simple reality is Japanese people just are not very good at English, you know, as scores would indicate, you know, at a global level. So in your personal journey, you had the experience of studying abroad at UC Davis. So I feel like that would sort of be the lighter version, right, of someone to try to get that real firsthand language as well as cultural acquisition. If it wasn't to go to INTA or, you know, to go abroad as a high schooler or middle schooler, at least in college, to, you know, go abroad to, you know, ryugakusuru. And in your case, how much of an impact do you think your time at UC Davis, which I believe, what is it, you said about 6 months or a year?
Something like that, yeah. Short time.
So your short term, you know, stay at Davis, how much has that impacted your career as well as, you know, your ability to communicate in English? So not just, you know, the language, but also culturally.
I'd say, like, you know, flexibility is very important. Because as I mentioned earlier, I was from a very small town, small community in Chiba. And those, you know, flexibility, I didn't see very much. Then when I was, you know, studying at UC Davis, I was quite surprised how flexible faculty members are, and all other, you know, students from other countries. So I was quite shocked that I was thinking, why doesn't flexibility doesn't happen in Japan? So that's why, you know, I was, you know, I was very surprised that those, you know, parents may think, you know, you know, international school is like quite similar to, or similar to Japanese private, different from any Japanese private schools, I believe. And yeah, it's that's, you know, very much, you know, I just, like, you know, that's, you know, impact when I was at UC Davis. So
interesting. So it seems like that is one path people can take if, you know, they really want to sort of bring up their level in regards to linguistics as well as, you know, understanding foreign cultures, is that year or half a year abroad during college. So this is a little bit unorthodox, but it's something that maybe I want to continue to do as I interview anyone who is, you know, former staff, faculty, administrators of international schools. But, you know, during your time there, so 2001 to 7, so I guess graduates of about 2001 to 2000, you know, 10, you would have interacted with. Do you have any messages towards them who may be watching?
I would say, like, you know, be yourself, no matter, you know, what you're doing. Because, you know, it is really hard, especially female students. Because I'm a female too, so I'd say it may be a lot, you know, overwhelming situation, whatever you do. I find some of them are, you know, having kids right now. That it doesn't matter where you are, because to me, you know, moms have a lot of pressures to raise children, like, you know, some, you know, stereotypes, like moms should be doing this, moms shouldn't do this. But I would say, you know, just be yourself, just be comfortable with yourself, because, you know, you are so precious, you know. It doesn't matter, you know, how others say about your parenting, how your kids behave, you're the best mom to your kids. And like, male, female, doesn't matter, you know, just be yourself, because those negative things may gives you a lot of pressure, but, you know, eventually, you know, everything is fine. Just accept who you are, you know, just try new things, you know. Even like it's pandemic time, like something new, you know, you should try like something new, and don't try to focus on the seeing negative things. So yeah.
And at the end here, I like to wrap it up with the guests telling us, you know, what is to come in the next 5, 10 years, next 20 years, 30 years. Please tell us what is to come.
For a new future, my son graduates from local elementary school that this March, you know, it's very soon that he starts going to local middle school. In April, that in Japanese school system, schools start in April, and they end in March, and that is kind of a milestone to both my son and I, as a mom and the single mom. You know, I was a little worried how things turn out to my son through his elementary school years. I think that, you know, it turned out good, especially this school year. It has been really tough for him, and he has always happy to go to school and spend time with his friends, despite this unusual situation. Then my son has told me, like, he will miss some of his friends who are going to private schools. He's also excited going to middle school with his buddies. So it's bittersweet. And so that, you know, it's very near future to us. So one of my resolution of 2021 is taking better care of myself mentally, emotionally, and physically, that I am an anemic. I have taken Chinese herbal medicine, you know, just trying to, like, you know, improve my health. So then I'm looking for result, which will come maybe end of this year or early of 2022. And other thing is, it may sound crazy, but I'd love to work as, you know, full-time blogger. So I really, really enjoy blogging. I think, you know, blogging helps me to express myself, and it heals my negative emotions. So I'd love to develop my writing as a blogger. And actually, I have posted twice in a week since January 26th, because I want more people to read my blogs, and posting my blogs on a regular basis means, you know, more people find my blogs, and yeah, that I hope, you know, they find me as a unique blogger. So I don't know when it's going to happen, but, you know, I'd like to work as, you know, full-time blogger. So I'd love to get offers. Yes, that's, you know, that's pretty much what comes to me. So, yeah, so far, so.
All right. Yeah. So staying healthy, a lot more blogging. And yeah, I mean, it's something we didn't touch upon in the interview too much, but I think just to sort of reiterate a point you made earlier, you know, to all the new moms, because you're right, that generation, the 2001 to 2010, they would all be, you know, roughly 30 to 40. So right at that age where they're having you know, children. And just for some context, you're a single mother yourself. So you know, you especially feel sort of the pressures and the hardships one would, you know, feel as a mom even more, because you have double that you need to do.
I often write about how single moms feel, you know, on my blog, you know, very, not really deeply, not really emotionally, because I don't know, like, how readers would understand my perspective. So I just don't write very much like in deep way. So just, you know, I just want to share my perspective, because now, you know, like everywhere you go, there are some single mothers. So now, you know, obviously I'm not the only single mother all over the world. So then I just want people to understand a little more about how our perspectives.
Yeah, it's definitely something that's very much has not been explored enough. Right? They say more than 10% of Japanese households are single parents, and in the States it's more than 20. So it's definitely something very like, yeah, well, it's got to sum all this too. To all the single parents out there. Yeah. Take us to the very end here, episode 63. And yeah, it was nice catching up. Nice seeing you again, sort of in this virtual context. I feel like nowadays with Zoom, to me, it almost makes no difference. I know there's a lot of people who really say it's got to be a face-to-face, but no, I don't know anymore. Yeah, it's 21st century, right? It's just, this is
right. Sort of also, like, in that shows, you know, as you know, you're an educator now, right? Then, you know, you have to deal with those, you know, flexibility. Then Zoom teaching is a new thing for you, for pretty much like, you know, everybody, like those, you know, parents and students. And yeah, flexibility, new way to communicate, you know, it's safer than, it's challenging for everybody, though. That's, you know, that's what we learn about new things. So
most definitely. And yeah, we'll see you around, and hopefully I'll see you in person someday in the future.
Sure.
Thank you for being on today.
Thank you for having me today.